Welcome to Star from the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have Talkcast every Thursday starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My personal account is Paul Franz at PaulFranz. So to find me at Twitter, let's go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. And of course, this have my primary account for the podcast, which is SFU On Call. That's SFUONCALL. And of course, my tertiary account is my business account, which is Franz Games, FranzGames, where I announce news and client updates. Some, of course, this lovely Talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from this week. Work on current projects, and on the 20th, they actually released 20 new 285th scale fighters. And with that, then the actual announcement was to celebrate the 1 year of having our ship on Shapeways. ADB, Admiral Design Bureau, has decided to release a new scale of miniatures. We believe that the 285 scale is a good one for people who want to use fighters or bombers for dogfights or shuttles for role-playing games. This is also good display models to show off your favorite paint schemes. To give you a good selection, there we are releasing 20 ships. Federation gains the F-15, the F-14, the F-18, and the A-20 Avenger Heavy Fighter. The clans enter with the Zerhan, and they fight the ZY fighter and the Z1, Zoran fighter. Romans have the Gladiator D superiority fighter, the Tribune D heavy fighter, and the Gladiator 3K assault fighter. The Hydrans have the Stinger 2 and the Stinger H fighters, and the Gorons have the G12 Chimera fast fighters, as well as both the G 18K and the 18KA Serpent Fighters. The Zinnies have the Task Fighters and the Thonies, represented by the Spider 2, Spider 5, and the Spider H Bombers. And there is even an admin shuttle to ferry your passengers' goods to and from places. Seacole also was busy working on Cubs Logo number 53, different blogs, the Gorn Master Starship book, and 100 plus ships for August 1st for the Mad Month and other projects. Steve Petrick was busy working on SAB updates, also the Gorn Master Starship book. Gene was busy working on releasing those 285th scale ships, as I just previously noted, and also upload all the ships to Shapeways. Keep busy on Facebook, answering questions there, and also keeping the BBS clean for everyone to play on. Moving forward, when it comes to the SFB tournaments, not much going on there. The Master Tournament, no updates there. I haven't seen any plays. When it comes to the Platinum Hat Tournament, we are waiting on Ted Fay and Peter to finish the game. That one actually completed with Ted Fay losing to Peter. So Peter is going to be facing Paul Graves in the final for the Platinum Hat Tournament. And comes the Rat 48 run by Ron Brenmeyer. We have only two games done, but we're waiting more to complete. Moving on to the library. No progress there, though we do have some updates for the Federation destroyers and frigates. The complete conversion still sticks at 2,426, with yet to be converted 906, with the percent complete being 72.8%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, as the one, the only, Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we got me, we got Dave. Where are you? You know, come on, join us. Just to let you know, I'm going to be emailing Dave and inviting Dave and Russ. And if actually you're interested, on July 4th, assuming we don't have any previous engagements, because I understand that a lot of people do, because it is a family holiday these days. Well, it's always been a family holiday. What am I talking about? Where you get together and have a party and whatever and celebrate the birth of our nation. And what I'm going to do is actually I'm going to do a test run using Discord. If you don't have this Discord app, you know, you can download it. You also, one of the great things about Discord, you can actually stream and chat and everything from your actual web browser, assuming you have a modern web browser. I'm assuming at this point that most people are off of Windows XP, off of Windows. Geez, what was after XP? One of those middle ground ones which no one talks about, before Windows 7. I forgot what that was. So you definitely have a modern browser that actually could support the streaming and recording directly from your browser. Because that was the one reason why I was thinking about moving to Discord. Obviously, as I mentioned last week, one thing that TalkShoe is saying that, oh, you know, we haven't put some investment. We got a beta test that we're going to be producing for the website, so we're going to support more modern things. And I really hope that works out well. What I'm really hoping for TalkShoe's sake is that they create an app, because I'm not sure how many mobile devices actually support using your microphone directly in a browser. It's possible that they do, and I just haven't tried them out because I've never had a reason to. Most time you use something that needs a microphone, you then use your app. And I'm not sure if on the iPhone or iPad whether actually you can do that or not. One thing I'll definitely have to find out. Because I think most people actually would like to have an app that actually did it, because there's certain things you can do in an app versus a web browser. And of course, these days, if you actually can do it within a browser, you can actually create, I think it's Flutter. I forget the actual, the web framework. Not web framework, but it's like, basically like Cord something from Apache. Where you actually, what it does, it takes the web view, and then you can add extensions to it, so you can make a web browser based app actually a separate app that you install. So we're gonna try that out. Hopefully July 4th, because I know Dave's available. I'm not sure if Russ is available, and if you're available, email me at sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. And I'll be happy to send you an invite to... I've already created the server itself. So, I don't want to have it generally open until, we actually set it up. In which case, I'll be opening up. I'll be sending out tweets on Twitter. Maybe I shouldn't call them twit. No, they wouldn't shouldn't call them twits. On Twitter, because I would have been calling everyone a twit, which it's a derogatory term in some cases. but any case, so that's what we're going to be. I plan on doing on July 4th, and hopefully, I can have some people join me, especially Dave and Russ, because I want to have kind of a limited kind of test. I want to see if we actually can switch over to using Discord, because of especially with Skype. The way Skype has screwed up things for me, I can no longer actually have Gary call in via Skype. I can't call in to talk to you and have him join in. It's like, what the heck? So you know, can't do that anymore. So I'll see if I can talk to him, because I'm pretty sure I can get. I know Gary's actually been in the talk show room and called in, and I really don't want to have him actually call in, but I'm pretty sure he has a smartphone, in which case he can install the Discord app, in which case he could actually he could join us and once more and be a part of this lovely community, which at this point is getting a lot more of me talking and you listening, which is a normal podcast. So it's like, okay, if no one's calling in, why do I have to worry about this feature? Though, if we move to Discord, then I still have to figure out what to do if... for Steve, I think I can get around that. All I need to have him do is get a set of AirPods and use his iPad. And have him install the Discord app and set up an account there. Well, yeah, Dave, actually, you got a point there. Dave's just mentioning that tonight is my 500th podcast. I don't consider my 500th episode per se, because some of the episodes are kind of wonky. And the only reason I say that is because I wasn't consistent, and I apologize for that. Where, if I recall correctly, some of the episodes were actually included, episode numbers, were actually just recordings of the Origins events. There are some, and I know there's the last time I did it, I didn't actually increment the episode numbers, but I posted them. So currently this episode for me is episode number 483. So to me, my 500th episode, quote unquote, like number wise, will be in another 17 weeks, which is like, that's approximately 4 months. So, but Dave is right that I think this is my 500th episode, 500 podcast. Now, here's the only thing, is that some of my episodes have been really short, meaning I'm not sure. I don't think I incremented the episode numbers for my quick, you know, Happy Thanksgiving podcast that I've done, or which are, again, not consistent. I don't think I do a Happy Thanksgiving every single year, but I should. You know, there's certain things I really should be consistent about, and I apologize for those times I have not been. But anyhow, so we'll move forward. The main topic for tonight, we're going to delay just for a moment, just because of one thing I found out while I was creating the wonderful news portion of this podcast, that if you're listening to the actual podcast, you already heard. And that is about that on the 20th, outside the normal schedule for the Shapeways stuff, ADB released 20 different miniatures. Now, I just looked at them before I started the podcast, recording the podcast tonight, and basically it's a fighter bonanza. We've got what? Let me look at this. And fortunately, here's the crazy thing. Because these are fighters, and they're all the same scale, we actually got 20 different fighters. So it's not like, oh, we got 20 different ships, and we got basically 4 different miniatures for the same ship. You know, given the different multiple sides and whether they're like Aztec or not Aztec, you know, things like that. And I'm not maligning that, because of, obviously, it still takes more work to to do the different scales and so forth, because you have to tweak things. And I'm not saying whether that's shorter or longer than to create a new miniature from scratch, because honestly, I don't know. I would willing to bet that it take a little bit less time, but I'm sure it takes quite a bit of time nonetheless. Just to give you a quick rundown of some of the fighters that were, we got the Federation F-15, F-14, and A-20. You got the Klingon ZH, the ZY, and the Z-1. Oh, I forgot about also the Federation F-18. I forgot about that one. Of course, the Gorn variants. We have the Gorn F-18KA and the F-18K. I forget what the differences are there. And also the Gorn G-12. You got the Romulan Gladiator DN Tribune D and the Gladiator 3K. We got the Tholian Spider 2, 5, and Spider H. And we got the Zinni Taz Fighter and got the Hydran number 2 and H fighters. So those, oops, I forgot one other quote unquote fighter that I forgot to announce. Sorry, which is the admin shuttle. And I think we already had a shuttle previously, but this one is 285th scale. And actually, that was one thing that was announced. I had as part of the news portion, which is ADB announces the 285th scale release of these fighters. And it's a brand new thing on Shapeways, which is kind of cool. I think the fighters are some of the more interesting things to do. Right. Dave just reminded me that the Fed fighters in the Gordon service would have plasma K launchers, not drones. Yes, that is very true. Dave, do you know what? If that would actually change the look of the fighter, I would assume that they would, because instead of having launch racks or drones, then they should have basically launch tubes is what they should have, canisters, which I assume is some kind of hollow tube. Instead of having a tip on the end, it might be shown as like clipped off. Okay, cool. Dave is confirming for me that my understanding is correct. At least my guess on the matter. Woo, cool. So just want to give a quick heads up on that, because that's something new and different and something definitely was unexpected, because I don't think they pre-announced that at all. Now, the topic for this evening is things that are broken. I think I call it problems with the games we love, and that is one of the things that actually Barry, he's not always available for this live broadcast of the podcast, and we actually had a quick, not so quick, it was like a 45-minute chat. Talking about Starfleet battles and talking about some of those discussions that we normally have here. And in this case, what we were talking about was the plasma races. And one of the biggest issues that the plasma races currently have in SFB is if you play it with a floating map, how the heck are, how are the plasma races ever supposed to win? Now, normally, when it comes to scenarios per se, you don't have these battles in open space. To a certain degree, yes, you do. But if you ever look at a scenario, usually there is a reason for a fight. The reason why we even brought up, I had to bring up that whole issue was because of, if a plasma race is going to be attacking a fixed target, it's got an advantage because your targets aren't going to move. And of course, then if they use Wild Weasel, what happens? Da-da-da-da-da. You run out, and then you're dead. Yay! So what normally happens in scenarios, and for whether it's a floating map or a fixed target, you know, a defense, is normally you have a time clock. That is usually the solution, because invariably for fixed targets, what is the big thing? Normally, you know, because of it, for the most part, when it comes to the base attacks, it's not part of a concerted effort. You know, part of a big major campaign where you're going to be spreading your fleet across multiple sectors, multiple bases, meaning the whole idea of reinforcements. Reinforcements may never come. If that your scenario you're playing in is part, if you in a strategic level is part of a full campaign where you have multiple bases attacking, especially local, you know, bases, and the question is, okay, if you got mobile defenses, you know, ships and the like, to reinforce those fixed targets, those bases, who do you send it to? And I remember I think it's one of the stories I really like when I read it in the captain's log, which was, I thought it was kind of cool. And that is, Dave, I'm not sure if you remember this one from the captain's log. It's called Hold Until Relieved. And that is, it was about a lone base, and they were told to hold until relieved. And the thing is, the relief never came. They were abandoned. And, Caps Log number 10. I didn't know which one, but thank you, Dave. It was Caps Log number 10. It was a really cool scenario. Because the neat thing about it is that, okay, you got these ships that come after the base. The commander of the base is called Hold Until Relieved. And what happened is the commander of the base, what he did was he sent everybody else. He stayed. And what happened is he set up an automated system to basically become a sleeping giant or a sleeping dragon. I think that's a better. Yeah, sleeping dragon. And the whole idea was that everything would be shut down, everything would be quiet, and then if a Federation ship would come by, investigate, because they hadn't heard anything from them, and you know they want to say, okay, well, are we going to be able to take back the base? You know, because the base at one point was actually part of the front lines, but now it's kind of the back, and the materials, like, everyone forgot about it. Yeah, haven't heard from them, so we assume it was destroyed. I think that was the idea behind it. But you know, they send the ship to investigate, and what happens? You know, because the ship's there, it doesn't have the shields aren't up. You know, they sent over a shuttle to go land. Okay, everything's okay. The base lets them in, and then they find in the bridge of the starbase the dead captain with a note on the screen: hold until relieved. The sleeping giant wakes, and then fires all its phaser fours at the ship. Blows up the ship. and you know, and kills all the boarding parties. And then after it's all done, it goes back to sleep. Oh yeah, this thing's a great fiction story. And I agree, it's a great fiction story. I love that story. You know, because basically, what do you do when you basically he's lost hope, and you realize that they've forgotten about him? It's like, so what he does, he takes it out. It's like, okay, fine, you forget about me. You will, you know, rue the day. But you know, that's one of those scenarios which one of the stories I really, really like. You know. But when it comes to, again, bring it back to the scenarios, and that is for these fixed defenses, yeah, you know, the plasma as an attacker has a real big advantage. As a defender, doesn't have nearly the advantage, because what happens is that, you know, if you come in, you fly, you know, you launch your plasma, and what happens? They then run away. And they can keep doing this. Because what's the big thing with the plasmas? Is they die with range. Which is one of the things Barry and I discussed. And one thing he pointed me towards, which I did not know about this, was the dark energy torpedoes. Had exactly all the attributes that I thought was kind of the solution to the plasma problem. And the solution, I thought, to the plasma problem was twofold. When it comes to flying on a floating map. And that is, what's the big advantage that drones have over plasma? What's the big thing? The big thing is twofold. Number one, the plasmas take 3 turns to arm. So you launch your torpedo, a bunch of torpedoes, and your opponent will then run away. And then you after it runs away, for a turn, they're gonna come back on a turn in which you don't have your plasmas. And so what do? At that point, you know, you just keep doing this, running back and forth. Now, for a drone, you can run away for like a turn and it's gone. What is it about drones? Drones can last for 3 turns, and then they keep flying around. And what they take 0 energy. So a ship can just launch these drones, and they stay on the board for 3 turns. They can do anywhere between 12 points of damage. Well, actually, they can go as low as like 4 points of damage. Okay, so actually, you can go down to 0 points of damage if you actually create a slug drone. To those who don't know what a slug drone is. A slug drone is where you create a specialized drone, which all it is armor. There's no explosive warhead. And that was another thing that I pointed out, which was that drone users have over plasma users, which is a huge thing, which is especially with when they added all those drone modules. You can customize your drones to a T. Now, I understand that if you use the rules if you're going to use those kind of specialized drones, you better be using the rules when it comes to this, because of what are those rules in there or what those rules designed to do. The rules that are designed to limit the amount of specialized drones that you have, the reason why those are in place at all is to maintain a certain level of balance when it comes to play. If you let a person have as many customized drones as possible, you're going to die. Because you can have Swordfish drones, you can have drones that have a warhead and a Phaser 3. So that's like a Type 4. You can have like a 12-point warhead, and you can have a Phaser 3 attached to it. And what happens then? Well, it comes in. It attacks you at range 3. Or let's say, range 2. I would do range 2. Well, possibly in range 1. Actually, range 1 I think might be better. That's because of you get to range 1 if you fire. Now, if it's going to be destroyed, it's going to be destroyed on range 1 because no one ever fires at things at range 2 most of the time. In my mind, when it comes to defensive drones, fire range 1. Okay, if the drone fires range 1 also, okay, it's simultaneous so that they're both do damage. And you might kill the drone if you're not. Might not. If you don't destroy the drone, then it comes in and hits you for a second time when the warhead hits. You know? And you can't do that kind of thing with plasma. It can't have the additional weaponry. It can't do multi-warhead. Though, the thing is, one thing that the very point out is, okay, you know, multi-warhead, you can go have a drone that actually has like basically a two-space drone, which has both a warhead and then a multi-warhead, so you can have three drones come out of it, so you have four drones from one launch, basically. But one thing I definitely pointed out to Barry is, like, Barry, the one thing that, in my mind, really, it limits when it comes to those multi-warhead drones is, of course, their dogfight drones. Dogfight drones do 2 points of damage per. One thing I think rightly so pointed out to me was that when it comes to those little dogfight drones, they might only do 2 points of damage. Actually, I have to double check whether it's two or one. He said two, and I'm pretty sure he's correct. That does 2 points of damage against the shield of a regular ship. And that being the case, okay, yeah, a drone, now you have, what do you have? You have dogfight drones, which take, I think, 3 points to kill. Yeah, 3 points to kill, do 2 points of damage. And so to kill, to actually knock down, to save yourself from 6 points of damage, you have to actually output three different phasers, because they're three different targets, to kill them. So what do? You don't kill them and it hits you for 6 points of damage. Versus a regular drone, like let's say type 4, just for giggles, take 6 points of damage. That's two phasers, period. Two phaser threes or a phaser three and a phaser one. And that will kill it. You know, versus three phaser threes to kill and save yourself from 6 points of damage. You know, in that case, you probably just let it hit you or run away. Because one thing I mentioned to Barry is that they're dogfight drones, which means that they're going to be limited in their range. The range is, I think he had it right, which he said it was on range 12. After 12 hexes, they die. But the target has to be within eight hexes. So you might want to run away, you might not. You know, that's one of those things that gets interesting. Because I have to agree, Barry, to a certain degree, which is that imagine having close in range multi-warhead drones. Now, again, this is where the whole idea of having a swarm of these things, you can do it, but that's going to be your one big shot. That's going to be most of your specialized drone points that you use. And can you imagine a swarm of multi-warhead drones, not multi-warhead, dogfight drones, hitting your ship? Yeah, they only do 2 points of damage, but are you going to try to knock them all down? No. And actually, that's one thing I don't think they're... I'm pretty sure they're self-seeking, but... they're self-seeking, but they can be distracted by wild weasels. I'm pretty sure about that. That's one of those things... It's been a while since I've actually looked into drones. But again, it's one of those things that drone users have over plasma is all these modules. And they can tweak it all they want. Now, the one thing that, as I pointed out to Barry, that sometimes drone users have a nasty habit of going a little bit overboard with is that they forget, you know, those fast drones that you can get in Y-184? One thing you got to remember, you have to pay for them. So if you have, let's say you have 4 B-racks. So that's 6 drones per rack. So that's 24. So you just increased the BPV of that ship by 24 points. That's just fast drones. That's not specialized drones. Now, if you add specialized drones onto that, let's say that you add an additional 36 BPV to that ship. What does that mean for your opponent? That if you're trying to maintain a balanced BPV to a certain, to the degree that you can, that means your plasma opponent, in theory, should be able to upgrade his ship itself. Meaning, went from destroyer to destroyer leader. Or, actually, that sounds... I think actually a little more than that. I think it's more like going from a destroyer to a light cruiser. I think it's a better way, better description of it, because I think that's about right. If you... like 30 points in BPV difference, that sounds like destroyer to a light cruiser. So basically, they're now fighting against a larger ship. So, which in some cases would not be a bad thing. The reason I say that is because then we get into the whole issue when it comes to fights and balance when it comes to having a 2/3 movement ship versus a 2/3 movement, it takes 2/3 of a point of power to go one move, versus a 1-to-1 move. So there's always the whole issue when it comes to those things, which is, okay, yes, the 1-to-1 has more power, but 1-to-1 requires more power to move. So it's always a balancing act of, okay, is it worth the actual upgrade to a larger ship because of the higher movement cost? Don't know. So one thing let's get back to the dark energy torpedoes, because I got sidetracked and I forgot to mention the things that it exhibits that I think truly solve the problem with plasmas when it comes to the whole thing with a floating map, because as I mentioned, you have the drones that they run around forever. Now, for most part, the dark energy torpedo solves the problem. Now, the only thing that doesn't quite match. Okay, here's actually the dark energy torpedo which I like. One, they go on for they are a fixed damage. That is, no matter whether you hits you on after 1 hex or 30 hexes, it still hits you for 10 points. That sounds about right to me. And you can actually allow you to do overloads. The range is limited to 15 hexes. I can understand. Okay. That is what it is. I'm still not sure about balance, whether I understand why that the whole thought process when it comes to that, because normally when you overload weapons, that means that the range that weapon can go, or the range that weapon can actually fire two, you'll fire at, you know, most of the times with overloads, you're talking about direct fire weapons. Yep. Dave, that's a soldier weapon. Now, and that is, you know, that overload weapons have shorter range. So it's usually it's like range 8 for, you know, for direct fire weapons. And this is actually a torpedo. And normally, when it comes to plasmas, you, okay, let's say you did, was quote-unquote, overloaded it, which is a enveloping torpedo. Normally, those don't, you know, it doesn't change the how quickly you shed energy. Kind of does, doesn't. It's because of the way the damage is calculated. That you take the damage multiplied by 2. You know, the normal damage is multiplied by 2, whatever that range was. Now, and that overload is 15. It's like, okay, range 15 and does 15 points of damage. Now, you know, so, but basically, the point here is that the damage remains fixed over the lifetime of it. You then also takes 2 turns. So it only takes 2 turns versus 3 turns to recharge, to launch a torpedo. So every other turn, you can launch a torpedo. And again, that's one of those things that I think is one of those things that plasmas would need. And that is a way of more quickly loading their torpedoes. Yes, currently you can do that with plasma Fs, but the thing is with the plasma Fs, the plasma Fs are limited in range. And that's where the whole problem with range comes into effect. So, if I was to do, that's one thing that, if I was to do some of the stuff today, you know, I would prefer, I would change the plasmas to be more along the lines of dark energy torpedoes. Dark matter, sorry. Thank you. Dave mentions dark matter, not dark energy. Torpedoes. And so I would like it to be that way. To me, it's more even distribution. You know, not even distribution. More a level playing field overall, because they both can maintain their damage on depending on range. One thing I did not actually look up, that I didn't have a chance to when I was talking to Barry, which was how you decrease the torpedo. If the dark matter torpedo is the same thing as a plasma, in that 2 points of phaser damage will decrease the warhead by 1. I'm not sure if the dark matter torpedo does the same thing. But as I said, for the most part, the dark matter torpedo does what I would really like plasmas to do overall, and I think would be balanced overall when it comes to a floating map. Now, as I pointed out at the beginning, closer to the beginning of this podcast, the one thing about any scenario, I mean, if we're trying to be realistic, I know it's a game, but being realistic about a scenario, i.e., why do you play a scenario? I mean, really? Now you're gonna have fun, but normally a scenario is played within a context of a certain area of strategy, meaning that you fight here or don't fight here because of you need to. One thing that we both agreed was that when it comes to scenarios, when it comes to battles, no one, I do mean this, you ask any admiral, any captain, anyone who has any idea of tactics and strategy, you do not want to fight a fair fight. There's no... why? You just get both sides are going to just get shot up. You always want to fight where you can have a greater firepower than your opponent. Now, of course, why would an opponent who is going to be there against overwhelming fire want to fight at all? You wouldn't. You retreat. Now, that's why a lot of times you have the scenario rules, because of the whole idea of you have the scenario rules is to put a context around the scenario, i.e., some things like the reason why you're doing this open space so many sectors away from this defensive position, this planet, is because of you want to give those people a chance to fly to flee. You know, because, basically the whole idea is a delaying tactic. You're trying to delay these forces. And if the forces try to go around you, you're going to, you're flying backwards, you're going to be flying towards them. And instead of having so that they actually, fight you dead on. Okay. Okay. So, Dave, can you explain? You said the phaser. Okay. Back to the dark matter torpedoes for a quick moment. That is, Dave's mentioning that the phasers are 2-to-1 like regular plasmas, but they don't reduce strength. I assume they increase range? I'm assuming you mean they decrease range. So, 2-for-1, and they're decreasing the amount of range by 1. So if you do 2 points of damage, it will decrease the amount of range for that torpedo by 1. I'm assuming that's what you meant. Because it didn't quite came out properly. All right, Cyrus. So overall, that's why you would even have a fight. It's because it would be a delaying action, and that's why you have those rules, is the context of a strategy of things outside of the scenario. Basically, why do you need to fight? Invariably, you don't want to fight because fighting means you can lose ships, people can die. Which the whole idea is to avoid that as much as possible, because killing people uses up resources that you only have limited resources at any particular moment in time. And of course, that's one thing that always gets me. Sorry, I'm going to chase this rabbit for a moment. Which is, you get the... that's one thing I must admit I liked with the Marvel... I think it's Marvel Universe that they've been trying lately to actually examine. With the Avengers movies, I think I got the right universe. And that is that have all the destruction of the city. It takes, you know how long it takes to build a building, to restore the integrity of the city after a building is destroyed. You know how long it takes to rebuild that? Ask anyone who knows about 9/11. How long did it take? Well, actually, okay, bad example. In that 9/11 had a special issue, and maybe I'm not. Maybe not. Maybe I'm not seeing it. And that is the specialized issue I was thinking about was that the actual people who died. And therefore, they're trying to recover as much many bodies, many people, many pieces of people as possible, and identifying those people. So that might be part of all of that. But that's one thing I think with the Avengers movie so far they're trying to deal with, which is the whole idea of this takes money, this takes time to rebuild, and that's one of the things with ships. Because I think about this. How long would it take you truly to build, how much resources, not just time, but resources to build a starship? An awful lot. And that is why if we ever are going to be a starfaring race, we actually we have to be able to mine outside of our own world. That'd be the only way that we actually could ever do it. You know, because of how much metal, how much conduit, plastic, all this was required to build these huge ships, which are basically cities in space. That's basically what those are. You know, because you really think about it, the people who got it right, Jindarians. I think they had it right. Forget about actually building a ship. You don't build a ship. You take an asteroid, you drill it out, you seal up what you need to seal up, and you got your ship. Ta-da! Yeah, obviously, you got certain things that you still have to build, like the engines and things like that. But, you know, that is the way to do it. Instead of having to, though, you know, obviously, the Zadarians also build the metal ships. But, you know, most the main ships are these basically colony asteroids. Asteroids that they live on. Now, there's issues there, you know, but let's not go there for the moment. So that's why you don't want to fight, because you're going to use up all this. Just imagine, I'm really thinking about it. Imagine how much it must cost to build a single starship. And we're talking about, okay, in the United States, where we're in $1 trillion in debt. Now, imagine how many credits or whatever it would take to build a starship. And how many worlds it would take to have enough resources, to have enough money to build those ships. An awful lot. Now, you know, I think about the same thing for Star Wars. Star Wars is the same way. When you're talking about large ships, you know, those large super destroyers, you know, that the Empire has, those are huge. Compare those to, you know, what a lot of the Rebellion has, these smaller everyday ships. Because, you know, you got, let's say, the Millennium Falcon, which basically isn't that big. You know, it might be as big as maybe an aircraft carrier. You know? And I think that, you know, aircraft carrier costs quite a few hundreds of millions of dollars to create. Actually, probably more than that. I think it's $1 billion. I forget how much it costs. It's huge. But, you know, so, sorry. Went down that road. But this is, again, this gives context why you don't want to fight. If you can avoid it. You know? Because think about the economic hardship. Now, to support a war like you had when it comes to the whole, you know, Starfleet battles, you know, Starfleet universe between the Federation and the Klingons and the Romulans and the Gorns and the Tholians and all, well, Tholians, they prefer to stay out of it. Hydrans, all these different empires. Those people, imagine economically how much was spent in just ships alone, in building the ships and then the armament and all that, how much how much it must cost. You know? And obviously, how much time it takes to build all this. It's just, it's incredible. Because in my mind, if you really think about it, realistically, how quickly can you actually build a starship? Realistically, I'm thinking. Because usually we abstract it all out, you know, when it comes to the Federation Empire. And you can build like, a frigate. But it's still a pretty darn big ship, if you think about it. A frigate, you can build it in a year. Build a starship in a year. It takes us, 2-3 years to build a skyscraper. So, obviously there's some really advanced technology being used to build these larger ships. Probably a lot of robotic stuff, you know, you never know. But anyhow, that was one of those big things when it comes, getting back to the scenarios, you know, that's why the scenarios are set up that way. You know, is you have to give people a reason to fight. And I know Steve Cole has mentioned that on multiple occasions, is that whole issue, which is balancing the scenarios. Basically, as he's pointed out, nobody really wants to have a fair fight. Most people want to fight an asymmetric battle. An asymmetric battle is one where you have a smaller force or a disadvantaged force over a more advantaged force. And the big thing there is, why would you do that? And that's when the scenario rules come into play. Now, obviously, if a smaller force can actually destroy a larger force, that's a huge win. But that's why you have these different levels of winning, you know. Victory conditions. Those are different victory conditions, because it might be just, okay, we just need to hold these guys back from getting past us for what? 2-3 turns? Let's say 3-5 turns? Somewhere in that time frame? So, you know, that's why you have those scenario rules overall to balance it. You know, and that's why they have, okay, you know, if you have a large map, you only can move the map in that direction 2 times. You know, there's only so far you can fall back. And again, those are artificial things in practice, but the whole idea is to place context around the whole thing. So, you know, that's one of the things that I think Barry and I both agree is kind of broken. Because we were talking about that in the context of the tournaments, and the tournaments are always fought in the fishbowl. And we think overall, plasma, the way plasma currently is designed, the plasma weapons are currently designed, and drone based ships, are all there. You know, and the way they're designed, they were overall, they're pretty well, given the rules for a tournament, pretty well balanced. As anyone who has actually stopped by the discussion board, you'll find a section called RPS, Rock, Paper, Scissors. And that is the whole idea of given 2 ships and equal captains, one ship is going to have advantage over another. For example, Orion versus Andro. That's 90-10. It's a 90-10 split. 90% of the time, the Orion will win 10% of the time the Andromeda will win, given equal captains. And I overall agree that maybe it might be more like 95-5. But again, Orion's is kind of a bad one. The reason being that the Orion is not just the ship and its capabilities. Also, that depends upon the holy of what weapons that you actually selected. You know, because in a tournament play, you can select two different packages. And if you did not select the phaser-only package, you know, which is what you usually use for a cockroach killer, then, you know, the drama has a better chance of winning, you know. Will it ever be 50-50? Actually, in some cases, yeah, you can pick some really bad packages as an Orion. For example, against Andromeda, all drones. I don't think you would actually be able to win. The crazy thing about Orion versus Andromeda, and sidetrack here for a moment, and that is that Orion's one of the few ships where you can chase the Andromeda around, run it out of battery, because you don't have to fire at it. You just have to keep running it around. And because at some point, the Orion is has a lot more power, can keep up the speed a lot more, longer period of time. And if the Orion gets to range zero, it can kill the Andromeda, because overall, when it comes to battery and the ability to tractor, the Orion's going to probably have the advantage. The only way you even have a chance, even have a minuscule chance, will be if the Orion comes in, he tractors you, you've got to save your DizDev for getting out. It's the get out of jail free card on that tractor. Now, obviously, the one thing you probably want to do is you want to fight the tractor first. So then, and then after he gets you, then run away, because you want to use up his tractor already used. Because if I call correctly, the rules are correct. That is that after you fail a tractor, that energy is used up. You can't use that for another tractor. But if you're using amount of energy for anti-tractor work, that still remains in play after, I'm pretty sure it remains in play even if the tractor, the initial tractor fails. Yeah, I think that's right. I'd have to double check on the rules on that one. That's one of those things that anyone who's played Starfleet Battles will admit this, that most of the time you deal with 10% of the rules. You know, and most of those you have memorized because of, as I mentioned before, I'm not sure, it's been a while since I mentioned it here. That is one thing I've always said, which is Starfleet Battles could actually be summed up, if you did just a summary of the rules, you could sum it up in like 2-3 pages of rules from the hundreds of pages that are there. And that would cover the generics of how to play. Now, this is where the rules lawyers come into play, and why we have all the other rules. Because the rules actually are to say, okay, given this situation, the interaction between this weapon, this system, and this system, how does that actually, what are the defining rules on how that works? And that's why you have the SFB, it has this large set of rules. You know? Which reminds me, someone wanted to learn Starfleet Battles, and actually I need to reply back to him. I'm going to reply back to him tonight. I was going through my junk folder, which I rarely do, And I found him. Found his email. I was like, oh, man, it's been sitting there since the 22nd of June. It's now the 28th, and I'm replying to him saying I'm apologizing because I just found this in my junk folder. And I apologize for not getting back to you sooner because I didn't realize you were there. Because, come on, how many of you actually check your junk folder on a daily basis? Don't answer that. Because I'm sure there's somebody out there going, oh, I check every day because we all get old false positives and things like that. And the only reason I was going to check the junk folder is because Frank LeMay, he mentioned to me, oh, yeah, I did some updates for, the Federation Destroyers. And I sent you 2 weeks ago. And I went, Frank, I didn't receive any of them 2 weeks ago. I received some 5 days ago, but not 2 weeks ago. So it's either he misremembered and Frank is getting old. And like, you know how when you get older, things go by, time seems to fly faster. One of those things. And I'll be the first one to admit that happens to me. So I'm not putting down Frank. It's just, I know how that is. That's weird. This week has actually been one of the slow weeks. Normally, it's like Saturday. It's Saturday again. You know what happened? You know, wasn't it just Saturday yesterday? You know, things like that. Just kind of goofy. But anyhow, So I'm gonna volunteer my services to teach this guy. And actually, the first thing I have to talk to him about is like, okay, do you know the rules? Do you have a copy of the rules? And he says, no. And then I'll go, well, then we'll have to start with at least the cadet version of the rules and start with there. Because that's available for free. You can download them. It's a relatively short amount of rules. And you actually, it's available free, not from ADB, directly from ADB anymore. I'm assuming the reason why ADB moved it off to the e-tailers was mainly because of bandwidth costs. Because having that available just makes it a heck of a lot more bandwidth is required anytime someone wants to download it. And, of course, the question is why would people want to download it if they don't want to play it? But then you have all these the internet hoarders that download everything. You know, not sure what. I'm actually, that's one thing I need to do on my... It's been 10 years, and I still haven't done this, which is, I've spent some time on it, which is cleaning up my hard drive, getting rid of all the junk, which I no longer need. At the very least, archive some of the stuff, so I cleaned up some of my folders. You know, especially when it comes to library stuff. I still got some old Federation Commander stuff that Frank did for me. You know, I got some of the cards and so forth, and I don't know where all that is. Where the status of that is, you know, because I stopped doing the fitters. You know, we got the library to a certain degree, and we never improved upon it. But anyhow, moving forward. So that was, that was one of the things that Barry and I pointed out, which was the whole issue with plasmas and floating maps. You know, we were just talking about trying to deal with that. So, I think that's one of the things that I think will never be solved. The question is, obviously, SMB is too far. You know, the history is too long with it. The rules are set in stone; those won't be changed. But there's other things that definitely need to be changed. You know, about stuff about us, and I don't think they ever will be. It's one of those things that my guess is what's going to have to happen. Is that there's going to have to be a community effort, is the way I see it. To maybe create a set of alternate rules, or our own kind of updated rule book. When it comes, or at least, addendums that we can add into the book. That's a better way of putting it. Addendums that we can add into the rules to cover certain situations. For example, the whole idea of what, when it comes to the PF's situation, the PF DAC situation, where you got, I think Aaron Staley pointed out it with the, I think the Zinni MRN, the multi-role needles, where what, it's not clear by the DAC rules what needs to be, what has priority when it comes to what gets hit, what can be hit by these different DAC elements, whether it's a hull or whatever. I have to double check to see exactly what that issue was, but that was the actual issue that was in the core rulebook. And then, of course, I'm sure that I've heard it multiple times, both from me and from Barry's on that, is we talk about the whole issue with the Omega rules. And the Omega rules, they got them so they are stable. They are workable. Are they balanced? No. And that's one thing that I think might be one of those things we might have to do a community addendum version that will fix the problems, because of, one, we can't republish the rules ourselves because of licensing. We can, as a community, create an addendum to the rules and say, okay, we're going to, ADB is too busy with other things, keeping the business alive, keeping, a product out, running out the door so people will buy them and they'll get paid and they can stay in business. And most people, let's be honest here, most people aren't waiting for the Omega Master Rulebook to be fixed. And if they fix that rulebook so it actually is balanced, because some of the rules need to be redone. For some of the weapon systems, some of the way they work has to be, they really should be redone. Really. Because the big issue is the interactions with that. For the most part, if we can fix the rules, I can let it go. I can let it go. The whole issue that I have with how janky the Omega Master Rulebook is, i.e. how phasers are done, how plasma type weapons are done, those kind of things where they just mention, this works like this. This is like this, but it's not. That thing which drives me up the wall, and it doesn't really make it feel like a polished product. Excuse me. So I think, if we can do that, that would be a great thing. I'm not sure if we, as a community, if we'll ever do that or not. Obviously, that seems to be like one of the, to do a correction for those rule books, what that would require when it comes to being a community effort would be, one, at the very least, it seemed to me, it's like open source, an open source library, an open source program. Normally, what does it take? Normally, it starts with a single individual who has a driving passion for what they are doing. Whether it's a library to do encryption, or a program which allows you to manage your time, or whatever little thing that they have a passion for that they think that is being done wrong, or the current products that really don't fulfill their need in the way they want it, so they do it themselves. They have the skills, so they do it themselves. Now, obviously, there's a point where it's like, guy, you're fighting uphill. You really should maybe take a current product, fork it, and start with somebody else's code when it comes to open source. But anyhow, the key here, is that you have an individual who has a driving passion, and then after you create this thing, then other people learn about it and they get excited about it too, and they want to join in. And that's my guess. That's the way this would have to happen for the fixing of the Omega Master Starship book, and that, fixing of certain rules when it comes to Starfleet battles. Now, The big thing is, of course, the SAP rules. I'm sure that we all, actually, maybe not all. For those people who have been with Starfleet Battles long enough and have been on the discussion board long enough, you'll remember the rules that the ADB wanted to add, that they want to change about Starfleet Battles, that they thought worked out really great when it comes to Federation Commander. They wanted to bring that back into Starfleet Battles. But the problem is I was going to say purist, but that's not the right term. But the people who played Starfleet Battles for the longest period of time, over 25 years now, would squawk and just go, no, they can't do that. Things like, the fixing of the whole issue of the Kaufman retrograde, i.e. have it so it costs double to go to move in reverse, which would definitely solve, for the most part, solve that issue. Because then you can't keep up the speed. Then of course, the issue with sit and spin. That's the one thing that most people, Growler. Admiral Growler, I think it was. I forget his last name. He was a judge at Origins. I worked with him many times. He actually was a college professor, and then never got tenured, so he started working as a math teacher in high school. And he said that was actually more fulfilling. He enjoyed it a lot more than the whole crap they had to deal with when it comes to working in a college. And that was that he felt like FedCom actually embodied the whole concept of speed is life better, because of you were limited by the amount of reinforcement you actually could apply to a shield. So there was no encouragement whatsoever to sit and spin, even if you had wild weasels. The whole idea, because FedCom doesn't have wild weasels, but the whole idea of the reason why you sit and spin is why you can use all that energy that you normally would do for movement would put into reinforcement, so you could put up this big freaking brick to save you. And you can do that. If you have someone trying to come in, you have all this power to fire your weapons and have this big shield, and then you have a person who's coming in who doesn't have the amount of shield reinforcement that you can have, and might have this, has also equal weapons overall. Let's just say that. And you can blow them out of the water. So there's no reason for them to come in. And that's why we have rules under the tournament. It's called non-aggression rules. That if you do that, then you can basically be, you can say, well, you lose. Because it's a kind of play that we want to completely discourage. And when we need to truly discourage that from general play is to change the rule. Now, that's some people who are squawking at that. And just same for the reverse. I think there's some other rules too that ADB want to modify, but mentioned that, okay, these are things that we would like to change, but we're not going to change because people would scream bloody murder. So that, that was one of those things that maybe that's one of those things that we could, as a community, we could say, well, these are addendum to the rules that we decided as a community that we're going to play with. And we can say, well, this is called Starfleet Battles Plus or Starfleet Battles Community Edition or whatever we want to call it. These are rules. Basically, these are like house rules that we add on to Starfleet Battles and say, this is the way we play. And then here's the crazy thing that I'm thinking about when it comes to the community. Previously, before the age of the internet, what a word. You could do this kind of thing, and it was called house rules, and that was house rules, as in you had a small community which was cut off from everybody else. Now, when the age of the internet, you can say that it's a small community, But if enough people in the community, a large enough set of players worldwide or countrywide, because let's be honest, I'm not sure how many people actually play in the whole world. Yes, I know there's some people in Europe, some people in Australia, definitely a lot more people in the United States that play, because the rules never have been translated because it costs too much and it's not really worth it for A to B to get them translated. Trust me, I know it costs a lot of money to translate things. I work for a large corporation that, we get things translated, and I've seen some of the costs involved, and I go, wow. And that's for, whatever. We got a huge budget that it's larger than the budget, larger than the amount of money that I think ADB earns in a year. Let's tell you that. And these are just updates. Actually, no, the updates aren't cost that much. I think the last updates cost $20,000. And that's just for updates. That's not the full translations. Full translations might cost over $200,000. For my product, so it gets kind of expensive. But anyhow, moving forward, so you know that's something that you know as a community, if you've got enough people who use these quote unquote house rules, they become the de facto rules that people play with, which would be kind of interesting, in my mind. But anyhow, I think with that we're going to wrap up for this evening. It's been a wonderful chatting with y'all. Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to me and my rants for this evening. It was a pleasure. So tonight we had a nice little discussion about plasma and some of the issues it has and what I think is a possible solution, obviously. And also that we can actually fix these things, but it had to be outside of the whole ADB thing, because as official changes, these things aren't going to happen. You know, as a community, we can say, these are our house rules and these are the ones we play by. So, and that, you know, and also discuss the whole reason, you know, that for scenarios to actually have those rules in place to provide the context for a scenario and not just individual, because even in campaigns, that's what you do, you know. And why you have these fights, why you fight. And of course we'll rant there on resources and how much this it really takes, you know, for all this. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.